I had to put these books forward for district approval to be able to read them in my classroom. The school trustees banned them.
The judges began to ask him questions about whether the subject of same-sex families was an appropriate one to raise with children at the kindergarten grade one level.
It is the reason why we have communities such as the Castro and Halsted Street in Chicago and the Village and West Hollywood, is because we seek to be with others like ourselves.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Austria and India act to axe anti-gay sex laws. Canada's High Court gets a read on banned children's books and giving the Stonewall generation a place to call home. Those stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 29th, 2002. In the week including the anniversary of the 1969 Stonewall Uprising that marks the beginning of the contemporary movement for lesbian and gay rights, decriminalization of homosexual acts came to the fore in several countries. Austria's highest court struck down the anti-gay paragraph 209, whose repeal had long been a top target of gay and lesbian activists and a demand of the Council of Europe and the European Parliament. While Austria's heterosexual age of consent is only 14, the law has provided for prison terms of up to 5 years for consensual acts between a man over the age of 19 with a male between the ages of 14 and 18. A single relationship could variously be legal and illegal. Legal if it began when the partners were 17 and 19, illegal when the older partner turned 20, and legal again when the younger partner turned 18. That absurdity led Austria's constitutional court to declare the law unobjective, as well as a violation of equality laws. Yet the activist group Platform Against Paragraph 209 reports that each year there have been about 50 men charged and 20 men convicted under the law. The group has called on the Austrian government to overturn convictions and pay compensation for some 1,500 of those men. ILGA, the International Lesbian and Gay Association, is concerned that paragraph 209 will remain intact through the end of February and fears that the right-wing majority of the Austrian parliament will use the interim to enact a new anti-gay law. However, the opposition Greens and Social Democrats were quick to call for equal treatment of gays and lesbians and for general amnesty in all pending paragraph 209 prosecutions.
There could also be a breakthrough in India, where the colonial-era sodomy law provides for 10 years imprisonment and the possibility of a life sentence. Solicitor General Mukul Rohtagi told the Delhi High Court this week that the government is examining the legal, social, and ethical aspects of decriminalizing homosexual acts among consenting adults, and that it will file a statement in 6 weeks. He was speaking at a hearing of a legal challenge brought by the NAS Foundation, which saw several of its AIDS prevention outreach workers arrested in police sweeps of cruising areas.
Police patrolling cruising areas are justified in appearing to be seeking gay sex, according to an appellate court in the Canadian province of Ontario. The Ontario Court of Appeal this week unanimously upheld a lower court ruling against Daniel Webb, who claimed entrapment in his 1993 arrest in a park in Kitchener. Webb said the shirtless officer had followed him in the park and coerced him into the groping that resulted in his arrest. Although the charges against Webb were dropped, the arrest and the police revelation of it to the media resulted in the loss of his license as an Anglican minister and his estrangement from one of his sons.
A police sting on the internet led to a 3-year prison sentence for an Egyptian student, but that conviction was overturned by an appeals court in Cairo this week. The 19-year-old man known as AMS was arrested in mid-May at a planned meeting on the street with a man he'd met on the internet, who turned out to be either a police officer or an informer. Based on their exchange online, AMS had been convicted for both debauchery and for importuning. The reversal of AMS' conviction offers some small hope as the Egyptian government begins a new trial in the coming week for 50 of the men who were arrested last year in Cairo at a gay-friendly riverboat nightclub. Previously, 21 of them had been convicted of debauchery and 29 acquitted in the state security court set up to deal with terrorists. But under international pressure, President Hosni Mubarak ruled that their cases should not have been heard in that court, although he let stand convictions for two other men presented as ringleaders. He left it up to prosecutors to decide whether to retry the men, and they've now announced they will do so in a civilian misdemeanor court in Cairo. Despite the change of venue, the same judge will preside. Human rights activists are outraged at this double jeopardy for men they believe should never have been arrested in the first place, particularly since many of the men reported serious abuse at the hands of their jailers in the course of their lengthy detention.
But the civil rights of gays and lesbians in Germany got a boost this week as the German parliament, the Bundestag, celebrated the Stonewall anniversary with a vote to create a national foundation to advance them. Annual federal grants of 3.75 million euros will support the Magnus Hirschfeld Foundation through 2006. Hirschfeld, who died in 1935, was a pioneering researcher and advocate for equal treatment of gays and lesbians.
While the Stonewall anniversary is being observed around the world with pride celebrations, one of the oldest and largest came to the brink of bankruptcy this week. Organizers of Australia's world-famous Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras announced that a debt of $250,000 would end its 25-year history unless guarantors could be found. Another $250,000 in debt had already been defrayed by fundraising. But it looks like community response may have saved the day. Seven volunteers came forward at a community meeting, although the bank holding Mardi Gras overdraft has not yet agreed to accept guarantors. The head of the National Tourism Task Force called on the Australian and New South Wales governments to help with public funds, citing the widespread economic benefits of Mardi Gras and dubbing it an iconic part of Australian tourism, deserving of government support. Mardi Gras's financial problems are attributed to the September 11th terrorist attacks on the U.S. on two counts. First, Australian international tourism has dropped by some 30% since then, including 5,000 fewer visitors to Mardi Gras itself. Second, the parade faced sharply increased liability premiums because of the threat of terrorism.
Also in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, Republican U.S. President George Bush this week signed into law a bill named for openly gay New York City Fire Department chaplain Michael Judge. Judge was one of a small number of public safety officers who died in the attacks who left no survivor legally qualified to receive a federal death benefit. Those benefits have been restricted to victims' children, parents, and legally married spouses. For police and firefighters who die in the line of duty without such survivors, henceforth and retroactive to 9/11, the Michael Judge Law will allow a payment of $250,000 from the Public Safety Officers Benefits Program to whomever the deceased named as a beneficiary on their life insurance policies. It's believed to be the first and only U.S. federal death benefit accessible by surviving gay or lesbian domestic partner, and some conservatives had opposed it on that basis. Bush's own Department of Justice had also posed it as likely to create unintended and unfortunate results.
There were also two moves in the U.S. Senate this week to extend equal treatment to gay and lesbian federal workers. Minnesota Democrat Mark Dayton announced that he'll introduce a bill to give all civilian federal employees' domestic partners, regardless of gender, full spousal benefits, including health and life insurance, workers' compensation, and pensions. He noted that health and life insurance benefits alone can comprise up to 40% of the value of an employee's compensation package. Much less sweeping, but much more likely to advance, is a resolution introduced by California Democrat Dianne Feinstein to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation in the Senate's own employment policies.
A Swedish court's recent ruling that a sperm donor must pay child support to a lesbian mother was upheld by an appellate court last week. Wanting the three children to know where they came from, Igor Lenberg had signed a statement acknowledging his paternity. The two courts have found that sets him apart from sperm donors who go through official channels, which protect their anonymity and absolve them from legal responsibility. However, in Sweden, lesbians cannot receive artificial insemination at government clinics, so the process of Lenberg's fathering was private and extra legal. Lesbian mother Anna Björling sought support for her sons, who are 6, 8, and 10 years old, after breaking up with her partner. The appeals court has found that Lenberg must fork over monthly payments of more than 2,800 crowns, equivalent to about $265 U.S.
And finally, a website launched in Britain this week is the first in Europe and possibly the world specifically designed to arrange sperm donations for lesbians planning artificial insemination. The launch of mannotincluded.com was widely reported, resulting in more than 40,000 visitors from five continents in its first 48 hours, even though the site won't be fully operational until July 9th. In those first 48 hours, there were 8,000 registrations for the service, 3,000 from lesbian couples, and 5,000 from men wishing to be donors.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 29, 2002, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
Whether or not retirement is in your immediate future, you'll want to hear about some interesting developments for those gay and lesbian golden years later in the program.
Children, in the best interests of the children, so many strings have been tied, tied to their wings. Oh, how can they? How can they sing?
Three children's books depicting families with same-gender parents were banned by the School Board of Surrey, British Columbia in 1997. The legal battle over whether Asha's Mums, Belinda's Bouquet, and One Dad, Two Dads, Brown Dads, Blue Dads are appropriate for elementary school classrooms didn't stop there, however, and the case finally reached the Supreme Court of Canada on June 12th. This Way Out's Heather Kitching reports from Vancouver.
My name is James Chamberlain, and I teach at George Vanier Elementary in Surrey. I've been teaching kindergarten for 6 years, I guess. In April of 97, I put forward some books for district approval in my district about same-gender families.
Surrey school teacher James Chamberlain is speaking to a forum about queers and the education system.
I had to put these books forward for district approval to be able to read them in my classroom. What happened was it became a huge thing in the media in Surrey. A couple of supportive parents in my classroom took it upon themselves to do a petition in support of the books. And there were 22 families in my classroom that year, and 17 of them signed the petition in favor of the use of the books. And they made a presentation to the school board the evening that the books were banned. All the presentations were in favor of the books, but the school trustees decided that these were not suitable for kindergarten or any other grade level, and so they banned them.
That was 5 years ago now. At the time, nobody imagined that the ban would still be in place today, and nobody imagined that the small group of teachers, students, and authors who took the school board to court would be arguing their case before the Supreme Court of Canada. But on June 12th, that's exactly what happened. Joseph Harvey began his argument against the ban with an excerpt from one of the banned books, One Dad, Two Dads, Brown Dad, Blue Dads. From there, he launched into his argument that the ban of the books violates the School Act, which calls for schools to be run on purely secular principles. The school board, he said, made their decision based on some parents' religious objections to homosexuality. Harvey also argued that the book ban violates the equality rights of gays, lesbians, and bisexuals. But it wasn't all smooth sailing with the Supreme Court justices.
When he began speaking, the judges began to ask him questions about whether the subject of same-sex families was an appropriate one to raise with children at the kindergarten grade one level.
Murray Warren is an elementary school teacher from Coquitlam and one of the litigants in the case. He flew from Vancouver to Ottawa to observe the hearing.
Raised questions of if parents were to have a different view of same-sex families, then it might set up a conflict between parents and the school and so on. And I got quite concerned because those were exactly the same kinds of questions that we got at the appeal court level, and the appeal went against us and in favor of the Surrey School Board.
Joseph Harvey's presentation was followed by three other organizations also opposed to the book ban. Susan Ursel presented a particularly passionate argument for a coalition of queer family organizations that included PFLAG. I know the question of age appropriateness has troubled this court at every level, she said, and I don't wish to sound glib when I say this. The children of lesbian and gay parents do not become their children at the appropriate age. For them, there is no appropriate age to talk about their families, because they're always in those families. Ursel's presentation went uninterrupted by the justices. Then it was the Surrey School Board's turn to present their case. Attorney John Dives argued that the books were not age-appropriate for kindergarten and grade one children, because the presentation of same-sex parents might cause children to raise questions about homosexuality and the conception of children that they were not yet old enough to understand the answers to. He also said that young children might not be able to cope with the conflict between the pro-gay messages of the books and the moral opposition to homosexuality that some would learn at home. However, if Murray Warren had worried that his attorney had been given a rough ride by the justices, he was relieved to see at least equally harsh questioning of his opponent.
I think the most telling moment was when one of the judges said to him, the superintendent of the Surrey School Board, when asked what is the message of these three books, he said that same-sex families are as valuable as any other kind of family, that these families are headed by people who are caring, intelligent, loving of their children, supporting of their children. Judge LaBelle kept saying to the Surrey School Board lawyer, do you agree with the characterization of these books which the superintendent of the Surrey School Board has made? And finally, the lawyer replied that he did agree, and Judge LaBelle looked at him and said, then why are we here?
At another point in the hearing, Dives argued that the source of lesbian and gay people's discrimination, their sexual identity, went to the very question of age appropriateness. He suggested that there was a conflict between ending discrimination by including depictions of gay parents in classroom literature and protecting children from being exposed to information about sexuality that they are too young to learn. It begs the question, said Madam Justice Arbour, of whether this is a group that can be reduced to be, quote, defined by its own sexuality. When we depict heterosexual families in children's literature, we don't suggest that it raises questions of whether we collectively or individually approve of all the sexual practices between heterosexuals. The Supreme Court has reserved judgment in the case, and nobody knows when to expect a decision. But Murray Warren says he's optimistic for a positive outcome.
I think the three women who sit on the Supreme Court were very much in our favor. You could tell from their body language. And I think maybe two others of the judges will probably lean towards our side.
For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
We were out in the country, spreading our wings wild and free.
I'm Doug Stevens.
And we're the Out Band,
the official gay and lesbian ambassadors of country music.
And you're listening to
This Way Out, the international
lesbian
and gay magazine.
Appropriate housing is a major issue for lesbian and gay seniors that's frequently overlooked, and one that grows more critical as queer baby boomers reach retirement age. Many of the residential facilities they turn to are insensitive to their needs at best, and at worst actively discriminate against them. Several gay and lesbian senior housing projects are currently taking shape around the U.S., and This Way Out's David Bell caught up with one on-the-go developer to find out more.
Neath a starry sky, it's nice work if you can get it.
The gay and lesbian senior population has been steadily growing over the past 30 years. The generation that led us through the Stonewall era to the present day is getting older. The straight community calls this group the baby boomer generation. We call it the Stonewall generation. But whatever the group is called, they are getting older. And no matter how you look at it, there are a lot of them. Peter Lundberg recognized that this segment of the population is not being served and decided to begin his own journey and start work on Our Town, a gay and lesbian retirement community in the San Francisco Bay Area.
It was about 7 years ago in the front page of the Wall Street Journal, second column from the right, where they always have the little one paragraph kind of tidbits about business. And there was something there about gay and lesbian retirees finally have a place to go. And it was a little bit an article about Bill Lang and his effort in trying to start the Palms of Minnesota. And it was just like kind of a shot right through the heart. It's like, oh my God, because many of us, all of us, have talked about this. And it just suddenly hit me as this flash of revelation that this was what my life was supposed to be about.
Peter's background fit with the new project. With 7 years in hotel and restaurant management and another 7 years in real estate acquisition, he knew that his work was cut out for him.
First of all, having a background that was Wall Street in real estate syndication and acquisitions, I knew that you had to have some type of market research to prove there was a market. We being gay and lesbian, it's no question that there's a market. But knowing Wall Street is that you've got to prove things to the nth degree, and still it's all arbitrary how you interpret it. So what I decided is the first thing is that I would do a booth at Gay Pride here in San Francisco. And I had cards that people could register, and I had a brochure. I had 280 people register. It absolutely blew me away. Then I followed it up sending them a survey, and that's been the process ever since.
The survey's 6 pages ask a series of questions ranging from personal information to the desired amenities that people would like to see in a gay retirement community. The survey even asks people to rank a list of locations for where they would like to see the property to be built.
The survey results are divided about evenly, one-third from Northern California, one-third from Southern California, and the other third from the rest of the country. And no matter how you look at the data, whichever region they come from, is that Sonoma-Napa is most popular. It's probably one of the more difficult places to develop real estate. San Francisco was rated as the second most popular location. And again, it's probably the most difficult and expensive place to develop real estate. And then San Diego came in third popular location, much more reasonable place to develop.
Despite the strong desire to live in Napa Valley, other communities are in the works across the country with the same concept in mind. In New Mexico, there are 2 communities in the works, Rainbow Vision Properties and Birds of a Feather. The Arbor at Palm Springs is also in development, and Stonewall Communities is being planned in Boston. Besides being a population of gay and lesbian seniors, what would set these retirement communities apart from their straight counterparts? Looking at the communities that are already in existence in Florida, Peter thinks that he knows what it is.
It is the reason why we have communities such as the Castro and Halsted Street in Chicago and the Village and West Hollywood, is because we seek to be with others like ourselves. And one of the places that's already in existence in Florida, the resort on Carefree Boulevard, Gina Rossetti, the one thing she said is that they built their clubhouse quite large. She says, but you know, if we had to do it over again, we would double the size of that. She says, because it is used every single night and there is always something going on. And this is what's going to be very different about the gay and lesbian community, is that we want to socialize.
Community can have a very different connotation to different types of people. Do gay men want to live with lesbians? Do lesbians want to live with gay men? And what about age groups?
Close to 90% of the sample want to see a mixed gender community. There is more women than men who would want to see a lesbian-only community, but still the majority of the people want to see a mixed community. Oh, people want it to be mixed age-wise as well. That's a very strong preference. And the difficulty is going to be, how do you keep it that way? And that's going to be a challenge that's faced by every senior, age-restricted type of community. But for every person that doesn't want kids in there, there's somebody who wants to see kids in there. The truth of the matter is, it's a huge population and none of it's being served, and we all don't want the same thing. And you can't develop and meet absolutely everybody's needs. You have to meet one group's needs at one point, and you then will do another development that's going to meet another group's needs.
Since the majority of people want to see a mix of ages in the community, when do people begin thinking about retirement? And when do they begin thinking about where they want to live?
The biggest bulk of the responses on my survey is in this early 50s. It's the biggest chunk. If you do the breakdown between 75 and older, 70, 75, 65 to 70, the biggest percentage are in this 50 to 55-year-old. It's just like a classic bell curve, is that, you know, you've got your peak here at 50, 55. Well, 45 to 50 is about the same as 55 to 60, et cetera. So it leads me to believe that people really start thinking about it when they reach 45, they start thinking about it, get much more serious when they turn 50.
Most of the gay and lesbian retirement communities are geared towards the moderate and high-income segment of our population. There is a lot of discussion in the mainstream media that gay and lesbian people have a larger disposable income because they don't have children and because they have higher-paying jobs. But is this really the case?
All those studies that talk about the wealth of the gay and lesbian community are very specious to begin with. I don't think that they're reliable, and anybody who is a market researcher will immediately point out all the faults with them. Other more reliable studies that are getting closer to it is that there really is no difference between gay and lesbian population and the straight population. And one of the critical deciding factors really is, like in the straight population, whether you are in a partnership and whether you're male and female.
In San Francisco, Rainbow Adult Community Housing is planning their own senior retirement community. Their project is aimed at the segment of our population with low to moderate incomes. While the details are still being worked out, Rainbow Adult Community Housing is well on its way with full support of the City of San Francisco and community leaders. They are even seeking the support from the state of California. While it seems assured that the Stonewall generation will have a place to go as they get older, many of these projects are still trying to get off the ground. Each individual retirement community needs its own funding for startup costs and to build the properties. A familiar saying in the real estate market is, if you build it, they will come. And this time, it may very well be true. This has been David Bell. Everyone can make a difference in their community, so go out and do something today.
And you can get it. Won't you tell me how?
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Brian Nunes, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Heather Kitching, and David Bell contributed program material. Some of the music you heard was performed by Sarah Vaughn and by Chris Williamson and Trett Fury. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help in This Way Out's critical struggle to stay on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 2NUR Newcastle, New South Wales, WSMU North Dartmouth, Massachusetts, KDUR Durango, Colorado, you're in our hearts, and on more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody's going to stay tuned.